Canto. Let me see. How many people here are residents of the Bhakti Center?
Residents. Don't have their hand up.
Either Bhakti Center or Harinam Ashram.
Or Harinam Ashram. Okay. Very good. Anybody here for the first time? Anybody here for the last time? Okay. Let me.
If you use the microphone carefully, it goes screaming out. Other people can hear the class.
Yeah, when you tell me that, it gets me nervous. Okay, I think that's good. One moment here. I actually record my classes, so later on I can kick myself. It's a pedagogical technique. Okay. Fifth canto should be chapter 10, and we're on verse 13 and 14. Is the verse shown?
No.
How do you do this?
No, I don't want to be usually just the word translation.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes we have the verse.
Sometimes people have a verse in their devices.
Who has a verse? Oh, Krishna people, go chant the verse for me.
Okay.
I'm going to make sure I have this right. Okay, and then we'll skip ahead two verses. We'll read the verse. My dear king, you have said. Now, my dear king, the king is Rahugana, and the. Okay, and the speaker. Speaker is Yad Bharat. Yad Bharat's an interesting character, and a lot to learn from him because he kind of had a relaxed mood in life. Mm-hmm. I mean, he actually was realized, and sometimes we meet a very realized person and we don't know it, and that's a real lesson for all of us. We'll meet someone who is very realized. And has anyone had that experience, being a very realized person and looked down upon them? Mm-hmm. Looked upon them, my gosh. I meet someone, I discover they're very realized, but look at this person. He's kind of slovenly, or doesn't have his act together, doesn't look so well, and maybe doesn't speak like I speak. In other words, the operative word is extremely judgmental. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. So we'll go, my dear king, but I want to put this verse in context. You have said, you rascal, you dull, crazy fool. Now, if he was a New Yorker, he would have said it in stronger terms. I'm going to chastise you, and then you will come to your senses. In this regard, let me say that although I live in this regard, like a dull, deaf, and dumb man, I am actually a self-realized person. What will you gain by punishing me? If your calculation is true and I'm a madman, then your punishment will be like beating a dead horse. There will be no effect. When a madman is punished, he is not cured of his madness. So what's going to happen here is Yad Barat ended up, not by his own choice, being the palanquin carrier of the king. And of course he wouldn't step on ants, so he kept stopping and starting and gyrating a little. And so it's not a very comfortable palanquin ride when you have four palanquin holders and one of them is out of step. I mean, in my military days, I had no ability to march. And when I was in a company of soldiers, and I would march, and not so much intentionally, but I would get out of step. The whole company gets out of step. You get one person out of step in a military formation. Everyone gets out of step, which I did. And it really happened. So imagine just four people and one of them just stopping. That palanquin ride is going to be the ride that the king did not expect. So everyone in the material world is working like a madman under certain impressions falsely acquired in material condition. For example, a thief who knows that stealing is not good and who knows that it is followed with punishment by a king or god, who has seen that thieves are arrested and punished by the police, nonetheless steals again and again. He is obsessed with the idea that by stealing, he will be happy. This is a sign of madness. Despite repeated punishments, the thief cannot give up his stealing habit. Therefore, the punishment is useless. And the next verse, Sukadeva Goswami said, "O Maharaj Pariksit, when King Rohugana chastised the exalted devotee Yad Barat with harsh words, that peaceful, saintly person tolerated and replied properly. Nescience is due to the bodily conception, and Yad Barat was not affected by this false conception. Out of his natural humility, he never considered himself a great devotee, and he agreed to suffer the results of his past karma. Like an ordinary man, he thought that by carrying the palanquin, he was destroying the reactions of his past misdeeds. Thinking this way, he began to carry the palanquin as before." Prabhupada writes, "An exalted devotee never thinks he's a paramahansa or a liberated person. He always remains a humble servant of the Lord. In all reverse conditions, he agrees to shift the results of his past life. He never accuses the Lord of putting him into distressed conditions. These are the signs of an exalted devotee." Not a Tenukampan Shushamiskar Yamana. "When suffering reverse conditions, the devotee always considered that the reverse conditions are the Lord's concessions." We're not going to read the whole purport, but we're going to go back to part of the word for word. The first unorganic transorganic. Yad Barat was trying to save King Rohugana. And King Rohugana was assumed the role of a king. And later on in this chapter, he argues against Yad Barat's arguments. Well, if the king doesn't chastise and people won't do their dharma, and he says, it's by dharma that we get realized. So as the king, I have a duty to chastise. I have to do it. And Yad Barat, then it explains, ultimately you're not a king. You're not any of this. These are all temporary positions. So here we see the dichotomy that we often see in our own struggles, at least my own struggles, to understand what do we do in Krishna consciousness. We have our transcendental position and we have our particular dharma. Now, sometimes we reverse things. For example, in the ideal world of an ashram world, the ideal ISKCON world. Vera Bhadaram will be going up to every devotee and saying, what is your propensity? I'd like to engage you that way. And the devotee will say, I'll do anything for Krishna. In the real world, it often turns out the devotee says, I want to do my propensity for Krishna. And Vera Bhadaram will say, I need you to do this. That's the real world, the way often management comes out. Though Vera Bhadaram is pretty good at trying to put it the way it should be. But in the world of management, it often turns out that way. So we have to, at some time, we have to keep in balance these two different tensions. And the King Rahugan is saying, well, I have my duty, I have to chastise. But then, and let's say we're in this gun manager, for example, or a manager in a company, or I was with Krishna Chandra the other day, he's a manager of 120 people in a donut factory. Gosh, I wish he was here this morning, we'd have a whole tray of donuts. Okay. So we discussed his management style. And unfortunately, his management style isn't like King Rahugan. And nowadays, it's hard to work that way anyway. But he just tried to understand where each person was at. And so how do we balance these tensions? Do any of you experience this tension where you have a particular service, but your authority wants you to do something different? Has anybody experienced that? Anybody experienced that? Now, how did you deal with that, Krishna Kirti?
Well, I had to tolerate the fact that I couldn't do what I wanted, but I did what they wanted, and I could see how, you know, I tried to see philosophically how it was actually good for them and good for me, and, you know, that they came up to a higher level of surrender of my selfishness. But it was a challenge, actually, because I'm so used to doing whatever I want all the time, you know?
You and Yad Barat have certain similarities. It's like that. So that's another experience where, I mean, there was a duty, but they really wanted to do what they wanted to do. Now, all of you are individuals, and each of you has a soul, I would assume, has desires, has a nature. Now, how did Krishna deal with this with Arjuna? Did Krishna tell Arjuna to do what he was supposed to do? Or did he preach him very heavily that you're not this body? Like Yad Barat was preaching to King Rahugan, he was saying to him, I'm not this body, you're not this body, these are all very temporary. Did Krishna present that to Arjuna? Or did Krishna present to Arjuna, you had a particular duty, you ought to be doing your duty? Which side did Krishna present to Arjuna? Any comments? Yes,
Rahul. Both. In one say, he was telling him, you're not your body, but you should do your duty.
Well, did he say should?
He gave him the alternative, like if you don't, then this will happen.
What was Krishna's last instruction about doing his duty?
All your duties.
What was that?
Give up all your duties.
Well, that was one. And before that, he said, I've given you all these instructions. Now you may do. He gave him existential choice, as you're saying. So he did. He said, give up all duties. I mean, you're all correct. But it's an interesting dilemma. In the West, we tend to think like an analog computer. Now, those of my generation know what an analog computer is. The nerds here know what an analog computer is. Do the rest of you know? Mm-hmm. What's an analog computer versus a digital computer? Anybody know? It's a good analogy, but it's a waste if people don't know. Okay. Have anybody seen an older radio where you tune it by turning a tuner?
Yeah.
Like a car radio would often be like that. Yeah. And the digital radio, you hit a button, it goes to the station. So an analog computer was the early computers where they, before the microchip was invented, they used vacuum tubes, and it was tuned. There was all kinds of gradations of gray. You had to tune things to get into do what you wanted to do. It wasn't just digital, zeros and ones. So in the West, we tend to think like a digital computer. So that was obviously a simple trick question I put. It was it this way or that way? And the answer is both. In the Vedic epistemology, the theory of knowledge of how we understand things much more in an and concept. The word and is much more appropriate than or. And we find that that's somewhat of what Yad Barat was trying to teach the king. The king was giving his arguments, and Yad Barat was then trying to say, yeah, these things are true, and this is also true, and then put the truth in a various hierarchy. I was just reading, finished Yogeshwar's great book, Swami in a Strange Land. Anybody here read that book? Yogeshwar's book on Prabhupada, 50th anniversary biography. It's quite well done. Yogeshwar is a very intelligent writer. And in it, Yogeshwar was there from early days. He was a student at the Sorbonne in Paris, which is the number one music school in the world. And he went over to England. He had met some devotees, and they invited him to England. He went there, and he saw the devotees, and asked, what do you do? And he said, well, I play keyboard. He said, good, jump in this van. He was just visiting, first-time visitor, jumps in a van, has no idea where he's going. But in those days, none of us thought of that. I mean, I used to just get every place I went by hitchhiking. You didn't worry about weird people as much then as you do now. I just stick out my thumb and I get there. Eventually. So he went and he had no idea where he was going. And he asked Tom Akrishan, where are you going? And he says, you'll find out. Did anybody know where he was going? Anybody know that story? Take a guess. He's in London. He's a musician. And he's going someplace that's going to, as we used to say in those days, blow his mind. Where would he be going that would blow his mind?
Right
now. No.
Apple.
What's that?
Apple.
Say again?
Apple.
Apple.
Whoa.
He went to Apple Studios. And they pulled in. They said, good, we need a keyboardist. We're going to record an album with George Harrison. And now George Harrison could play, but he couldn't sing because his contract with Apple Records forbid him from singing on any other competing album. But he gave him the whole recording studio. You see, Yamuna was very, when the audience got there, in Yamuna's book, which is another biography, which those who haven't read it, I strongly recommend it. It's like necessary reading to understand the Krishna movement. It was brilliantly written. And Yamuna was very especially important for me because she was most influential in me connecting with Prabhupada in the first place. So I really wanted to read it, and when I read it, I was amazed. So what the devotees did, they wanted, it was Krishna magic, you just depend on Krishna. So they went to London, had no money, probably to just go there. They had no money. In order to get from, they were able to get into Paris, but to get into England, you needed visas. And to get a visa to England, you had to have money in your pocket. So between them, they scraped together like $1,000. So one of them would go into England, and then they'd wire the money back to France. Then the next one would go into England. So it was six of them that way. Because you needed $1,000 to get into the country. They wouldn't give you stamp your visa at the border crossing. So they all got in and found places to stay. Then finally they had an idea. The Beatles were, if we want to Prabhupada said, if you're going to rob a bank, make it Fort Knox, where America keeps all its gold. Go for the biggest. So they started sending apple pies, apple turnovers, apple tarts, because he was a great cook. So they cooked it every day, and they sent it to Apple Studios. And every day they're sending these things to Apple Studios. And then George Harrison got wind of something Eastern going on, put on a disguise, and incognito went to hear the devotees sing in the storefront they had rented. And he was... and then eventually he invited them over. I forgot the quite detail. And he said, where have you been? I've been waiting for you guys. And there's Yogeshwar with them. And they go, and they go into a recording studio, and they record the famous album, which went to the top. It went to the top of the hit parade in England, and Krishna Conscience became very famous. So that was Yogeshwar's introduction. So I bring up Yogeshwar's book because, again, these tensions are well discussed in the book of one tension here is do we do our duty or do we do, do we act according to our nature or do we act according to authorities? How do we balance both of these? Another incident, I was just telling how Yogeshwar joined, is Yogeshwar invited Cardinal Daniloup. He arranged for Prabhupada to meet with a cardinal. Anybody heard of Cardinal Daniloup? Yeah. Cardinal Daniloup is an interesting character. He was, of course, the cardinal in Cardinal of Rome for France. Cardinal Daniloup was very active in the Pope John Paul's Vatican Council that reformed the church, made the church in some ways more relevant. Just like in any society, be it the church or ISKCON or Judaism, you'll find there are conservatives and liberals. How do we know that? Because people are actually born wired that way, it turns out. So the more liberals in the church, of which Cardinal Daniloup was, wanted to make the church more relevant. Before the Second Vatican Council, all the masses were in what language?
Latin.
Now the masses are in the indigenous language, English, Spanish, whatever language. But the masses were all in Latin. So they're thinking, how can we make the church more relevant? So should we stick with our traditional language, tradition, or should we become more modernity? How is this tension expressed in Prabhupada's instructions? This very tension that Cardinal Daniloup was dealing with, what are the two instructions Prabhupada gave that express this tension?
Utility is the principle.
No, what was one,
preaching
sort of.
Is the essence, mm-hmm. The basis.
Well, it's presented more dramatically in a different way. And this, to present it, you have to have two things. There's a tension, so it has to be two things. So that does say it, but there's something that says it more dramatically. Two instructions Prabhupada gave. These instructions represent the tension between the conservative and what some would call the liberal element of preaching. Two tensions. Think about it a minute.
Kind of like populist versus
elite. Something like that. But Prabhupada gave two very specific instructions repeatedly. Mm-hmm. Repeated instructions that represent this tension. I think about it. One of them is don't change anything. Deathbed instruction. Don't change anything. And what was the other opposite instruction? Absolutely opposite. Kala?
Time,
place, circumstance. So one is don't change anything. And the other is time, place, circumstances. So how many people in this room feel we shouldn't change anything is the most important instruction. How many feel time, place, circumstance is most important? How many don't know? How many are awake? Think about a minute. Just think for yourself for a minute. Which is more important to me? We got to do things in the way Prabhupada did it, or we have to adjust things in the way that are most effective. Yes, Prabhupada.
Prabhupada said, you can change the detail, but not the essence. So you have agrarian culture, they're growing banana tree. But if you try to grow banana tree in New York State, it's useless, you know, so here you have to grow corn. So the principle is agrarian culture, and the application depends on time circumstances. Don't change the essence, but you can change the detail.
Well,
but you have to have intelligence to know which is which.
Yeah, and Rupa Goswami, of course, talks about the essential principles stay the same, and the details change. And you're right. Then we get into the questions of what are essential principles? One man's essential principles becomes another man's detail. And so these are, I mean, you put it very well. And so these tensions will be there. And some people are, there was one devotee, I won't mention names, but we have a calendar, and our calendar is confusing because Ekadasi sometimes in Brooklyn can be a different day than in Manhattan. That happened to Gainesville. Gainesville, lots of different. So at one time, that actually happened. At one time, because of, you know, it's all mathematically calculated by the position of planets, whatever. So at one time, in a society, all Ekadasis were always whatever Mayapur was observing. We did everything the same day as Mayapur. But then, when you think about it, the way Ekadasis are calculated, Ekadasi in Mayapur is not really necessarily the same day as Ekadasi in New York. So then, got so sophisticated, sometimes nobody knows what Ekadasi is. It gets very confusing. So, should we go back to the good old days of the way Prabhupada did it, or should we adjust it based on modern technology? We have computers, and we did now, that any place can calculate Ekadasi on, you can Google Ekadasi and know it in a moment. So sometimes, even, it might seem like a silly little trite example, but you can see, well, we should do it the Mayapur day. Those are very conservative people. We have one senior devotee, who kind of retired a long time ago. So we won't mention names, but he's there. One time was a GBC man, and even though we, whatever day we observe Janmashtami in Alachua, he'll always show up on the Mayapur day for it. He'll always show up, very, very conservative by nature. So if we observe Prabhupada's birthday on a Tuesday, but Mayapur's starting Wednesday, he'll show up Wednesday for it. Now, he does this, so, and I wanted to get into his mind and understand what's he thinking. I visit him. Okay, was he? Because to me it seems so impractical. I'm kind of, you know, I mean, the most important thing to me is we have some sadhu sangha. We all get together and do the same thing. Even here, we observe Janmashtami here. We always do it a different day than Brooklyn, so we don't compete. And we do Prabhupada's birthday a different day. But nevertheless, somebody felt if when Prabhupada was on the planet, it's sort of like the Amishmen. They felt 1850 was the best year on the planet, and they're always like that. Or you go to Brooklyn, and you see the Hasidic Jews. They think in 1840, in Kiev, Ukraine, was the best day, so they dress like it's Kiev, Ukraine, all year round, even if they're living in the tropics. So we have the we have these tensions. So going back to dealing with these tensions, we're going back to Father Danilou. So Father Danilou was one cardinal who got on the liberal side. He really wanted to make the Vatican more relevant. And he did something that was unheard of in the church then. Now the church is really into this, and the current pope is quite into this. A little side story, when the current pope became pope, Pope Francis, one of the first calls he made was to a devotee in Argentina, a friend of his. He goes, hey, guess what? They promoted me. So definitely knows devotees and appreciates them. That's an aside. So, Cardinal Danilou really wanted to liberalize things. So let's have a discussion with other religions. Because before that, the position of the Pope, what the position of the church was, we are the one true church. And everyone else is a little bit deviant. And said, no. And I mean, I grew up in a Jewish family. We are the chosen people. And then I went to the Hare Krishna movement. We're better than everyone. We have the absolute truth. You know, we get this chosen person syndrome happens. And it doesn't work very well when you try to relate it to other people. So the Catholic Church had that. We are the one true church. Actually, they weren't even the oldest church, because the Catholic Church split into two. And the Catholic, the Rome was overwhelmed, and the Eastern North Church continued in Constantinople until around the 14, 1500s, when the Turks finally converted, changed Constantinople to Istanbul. And so the Eastern Orthodox Church lived 1,000 years after the Western Roman Catholic Church, the Eastern Orthodox, Greek, Russian Orthodox. So the Catholic Church is claiming we're the original church of St. Peter, and other churches says, no, we are. So they weren't getting along very well. Cardinal Danilou was liberal. Let's get along better. Let's talk to other religions. And he was winning. So here, Prabhupada is meeting with a very liberal cardinal. Very liberal cardinal. And Yogeshwar is thinking, wow, we're going to have a great interfaith dialogue. Sometimes Prabhupada could do things that we maybe shouldn't always do, but he can surprise us. So what did Prabhupada do with Cardinal Danilou? Anybody know the topic he brought up?
He smashed a
meat eating. He says, Jesus said, thou shalt not kill, and you're killing. And he corrects him, that's Leviticus. So Prabhupada goes, Leviticus says, thou shalt not kill, and you're killing. And Cardinal Danilou gave the arguments. Ultimate argument was the animal had no soul. And the humans... So Cardinal Danilou, this very liberal attitude. We'll see. How many people here are from a Hindu background? Okay? How many from a Christian background? How many from a Jewish background? Okay? How many from another background? Muslim background? None. We gotta broaden our appeal. Any Buddhist background? Okay, very good. Anything I left out?
The NFL.
What's that?
The NFL.
NFL.
My brother in the census, he wrote religion, NFL.
I can believe that. So we would think here we're getting into a more liberal interaction. So Prabhupada approaches Cardinal Danilou, and Cardinal Danilou wants to see that all of us, if you're Buddhist, if you're Hindu, you're Jewish, you're Christian, there's some commonality about us. He was actually had a little more understanding that you're not this body than somebody who says, I'm a Christian body, I'm a Jewish body, I'm a Hindu body. In India, the Jagannath Puri temple, if you're not born into a Hindu body, you can't enter it to this day. You may eat anything, chase any woman, drink anything, but you got a Hindu body. And you may be a pure, wonderful devotee, and you can't enter. Totally bodily concept of life. So Cardinal Danilou was trying to kind of rise above, but Prabhupada realized he was stuck. And he did what only Prabhupada could do. He went and wouldn't let him go that you're running wholesale slaughterhouses. You're hurting animals. Animals have souls. And he said, what is the evidence the animals don't have a soul? And Cardinal Danilou could not give any evidence. And at first, Yogeshwar was almost, he didn't want to quite say it, but embarrassed, irate, probably meet this cardinal and kind of beats, and it's a liberal cardinal, kind of on our side, and he beats him up. And then later, Yogeshwar, as he thought about it, understood the wisdom of it, And then he saw the tear in Prabhupada's eyes when Prabhupada talked about the animals dying. And he realized Prabhupada was doing two things. His wonderful, wonderful heart showing compassion for the animals. And he realized that Cardinal Danilou was hiding something. And he wanted to go deeper into Cardinal Danilou's heart and take him to a better place. Because Cardinal Danilou did die a few weeks later.
Wow.
At a brothel.
Not
he died after that. So he understood, Prabhupada walked in and understood that's not in the book. You don't say these, you know, no need to put that. You don't say these things, you know, publicly. But it happened. So Cardinal Danilou, Prabhupada, the faces and where the minds of Prabhupada knew exactly what Cardinal Danilou needed. He was stuck in a heavily bodily concept, and Prabhupada wanted to bring him out of it. So, I bring up Cardinal Danilou because he again expressed this kind of tension we're seeing in this verse. A tension between the king saying, there's a duty you have to do, and Yad Barat saying, there's a higher principle. Cardinal Danilou wanted to express a liberal principle, but he was stuck due to his bodily concept. So, there's the chapter is worth detailed reading, because those who read this chapter will learn from Yad Barat how to deal with this tension. And Yad Barat later on agrees with the king on many of his points, but then takes him, as Adi says, to the higher principles and separates details from principles. So I bounced around a little. I want to leave a few minutes for questions. Are there any? Any questions? Comments? Disagreements? You're better.
Thank you, Brahmacharya, for engaging us and keeping us seeing how to be practical. These principles.
To me, a successful Bhagavatam class is no one sleeps, but go on.
So, how do you, when there is a time, place, circumstance, how do you know that you're staying in line with the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra? How do you know that it's something that's sanctioned and is connected to essence and it's not just some figment of the imagination or sentiment? You know, something like
that. That is a perfect question. To repeat the question, how do we know that time, place, and circumstances is something we ought to be doing, is something we could do, and it's not just a figment of imagination? Let's say I feel time, place, and circumstances are that I should go preach in a bar. And in order for the people in the bar to get to know me, I ought to have a Budweiser with them. And you know, and that's time, place, and circumstance. So that's an extreme case, but how do we know? Well, I'll tell you how Prabhupada did these things. This Prabhupada did his sadhana. Every day was the same. He didn't experience jet lag. Got up, did his sadhana, kept his heart very, very pure. And then he experimented. So if we keep our heart pure, then we're open and able to experiment to what works. When Prabhupada came to America, people think he had a plan. Read Yogeshwar's book, read Yamuna's book, read Mukunda's book, read Satsuru Maharaj's book, read any of the books. You'll see Prabhupada didn't have a plan. He had a mission, not a plan. He definitely had a mission, definitely didn't have a plan, and he experimented. He tried different things. Why did he open up the west coast of America? Well, Mukunda and his wife, Janava, came to Prabhupada. They were one of his first disciples. They were the one that secured 26 Second Avenue for him. He was just living among, in an apartment in which a crazy man got on an LSD trip and chased Prabhupada down the steps. I was telling him, he didn't want to stay with Dr. Mishra on the Upper West Side. So the guy chased him down the steps. Prabhupada had no place to go. He was homeless among the homeless of the Bowery. And another one who had heard Prabhupada speak, another one that you gave a place to stay, and Mukunda got him to Second Avenue. So then Mukunda did all this. Mukunda always wanted to go to India. So he turns to Prabhupada and says, Prabhupada, we're off to India. I thought Prabhupada would be pleased. You know, me and John would just want to go see India. And Prabhupada was so clever. He said, okay. By the way, on the way to he's going through the West Coast to get to India. By the way, on the way, why don't you just open a center on the West Coast? And that's how Haight-Ashbury, the whole movement, began. Prabhupada just saw that opportunity. He didn't even tell him not to go. He just said, on the way, open a center for me. And I say the rest, then the whole Haight-Ashbury scene came. So Prabhupada didn't have a plan. He just depended on Krishna. Different things. The devotees went to England. They didn't have a plan. They started baking apple pies, just depending on Krishna. So what I'm trying to say is, it's okay to experiment if our heart is pure. We keep our heart pure, we can experiment and try different things. And sometimes Prabhupada tried certain things, they didn't work very well. For example, Prabhupada stopped doing weddings in ISKCON because people were just getting divorced. The culture Prabhupada came from, divorce was virtually unheard of. And then he kept marrying his disciples and getting divorced. He said, okay, I'm out of this. I'm not going to do that part anymore. So sometimes we underestimate how much Prabhupada's experimenting. Therefore, we underestimate how much we can experiment. But we can only experiment if we come in with it with a pure heart. Now, how do we know things? Guru, Shastra, Sadhu, that's it. We look things up in Shastra, we consult with Guru, and we deal with other sadhus, and we discuss things. And that's how I do things. If I want to embark on a new program, I have friends of mine. First one, I'll call to Guru Tavadaswami. Okay, I'm thinking of doing something different here. What do you think? I'll call the Purajan and say, what? I'm really, for some reason, I'm just not feeling happy in the nature of my service. I'm realizing something has to change. And I discuss it. And then ultimately, I have to make a decision. That's how it goes on. We shouldn't be afraid to experiment, but we should only do so if we can, if we follow the advice of the flight attendant. On every single flight, on every airline in the world, the flight attendant gives some of us the best spiritual advice we'll ever receive in our life. What advice does a flight attendant tell? Who here has taken a flight? Who has not taken a flight? Who doesn't know if they took a flight? I want everyone to participate. Try again. Who here has taken a flight? Okay. Who has not taken a flight? Okay, everyone took a flight. What's the advice the flight attendant tells you? The most important spiritual advice you'll receive, maybe, and one of the most important advice you receive in your life. Yes?
Save yourself before saving others.
Yes, put on your own oxygen mask first, then help the person next to you. So that's the key. We have to make sure we have our oxygen mask on. Then we can be kind of bold and experiment. The Bhakti Center is based on this principle of being bold and experimenting, and it only works if we put on our own oxygen mask first. If we just go wildly experiment, it doesn't work very well. If we have our own oxygen mask first, then we can be bold and do things. May I tell you, Anand with Prabhupada, he definitely had a mission, and the plan, he just was Krishna magic, just as Krishna offered to him. People think, Prabhupada changed his mind on so many issues. I asked one very senior devotee in the movement, who was Prabhupada's servant for many years. I said, tell me one concern you have about the Krishna movement. And he says, my biggest concern about the Krishna movement, number one concern, is, Prabhupada says, if we make Prabhupada says on the basis of making our decisions, he said it's the biggest problem. Because Prabhupada said many things on many issues. Often this way and that way. And he often said things from different sides. And in order to understand what Prabhupada says, we need the science of hermeneutics. If you don't know what that is, science of understanding scripture. The ISKCON hermeneutics is exactly three things is ISKCON hermeneutics, how we understand things. What are they? Three things. Three things. I'll give you a hint. Three things of how we understand something we don't know. I want to understand, is this what I can do or not do? How do I understand? Prabhupada said something. There was once a synagogue in Brooklyn that advertised for a one-armed rabbi. They wanted a one-armed rabbi. Finally, this one guy applies to the synagogue in Brooklyn with only one arm. And he's qualified, and they hire him. And he says, why did you hire a one-armed rabbi? Why did you want a one-armed rabbi? He said, we fired our last three rabbis. He said, why? He said, whenever we'd ask a question, he would say, on one hand, it could be this way. So, if we analyze what Prabhupada said on many issues, we will find he was not a one-armed rabbi. He gave different points of view at different time, place, and circumstances. So what are the three principles by which we can interpret what Prabhupada said and understand it, not just quote him blindly? Because Prabhupada wanted to create Brahmins. He didn't want us to quote him blindly. Three principles.
Time, place, circumstances.
Not quite, but close. That's time, place, circumstances is one thing, but there's three that are the actual hermeneutics that Prabhupada repeatedly gave us. Let's guess here for a minute. Am I running over time, by the way?
We're ready whenever you are.
Oh, okay. We'll finish up this. Three principles for understanding. Prabhupada said one thing, and then Prabhupada said something else. I gave a talk with Malati, a joint talk in India last month. Somebody asked about the moon. Did we go or not? And Prabhupada said one thing, Prabhupada said another thing. I had a pretty good answer for that one, but we probably don't have time for it. But Prabhupada said, this is most important. Prabhupada said, that's most important. So Prabhupada says, are there, but there's something for understanding seemingly paradoxical statements. Paradox says statements are in contradiction, apparent contradiction. When you go deeper, they're not in contradiction. You get more out of it. For example, we say all stool is contaminated and cow stool is pure. It seems like a contradiction, but it's not. So the three principles are Guru and Shastra. That's ISKCON hermeneutics that Prabhupada handed us. When you don't understand something, if Prabhupada says something, you don't get it. We go to Guru and Shastra. We go to Shastra and Sadhu. Some people say Prabhupada says it is the end all for everything. But that creates a singularity on Prabhupada. We just threw out what Prabhupada told us, which is Shastra and Sadhu. Sometimes Prabhupada was actually joking around. I was with him, and the jokes went over our head. They would go over our head at times. But Prabhupada said that. If he said it, and it has no appearance in Shastra, no appearance in Shastra, then we have to weigh it at a different weight. And Prabhupada wanted us to be intelligent, not just mindless robots, and weigh things and consider things carefully and thoughtfully. Now, Prabhupada says is very, very important to me. And things that Prabhupada said directly to me are extremely important to me. And personal instructions he gave me are the most important thing in my life to me. So I'm not minimizing that Prabhupada says is important. But I'm saying to give a class and just, as I've been doing, quoting Prabhupada says this, Prabhupada says that, that's not a good way of understanding Prabhupada. We have to understand the relation to Shastra and Sadhu. We have to understand sometimes in relation to time, place, and circumstance. We have to understand things that are very important and things that are less important. Things that are details of devotional service, Sadhu says, and things that are principles of devotional service. And sometimes, I've seen this, I can give examples where Prabhupada was joking around and people took him seriously. So I guess, but Krishna was funny. Mangal, what was Krishna's jokester friend?
Madhu
Mangal. He was even funnier. You know? And so, well, in other words, What Prabhupada wanted is us to be intelligent. When, in the early days of the movement, somebody went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada wanted, especially young people in their teens and 20s growing, he wanted them to drink milk. Why do you want them to drink milk? Why?
Strength for the brain.
Strength for the brain! You're growing, you need protein. We're vegetarians. He wanted them to have good strength for their brain. Somebody came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, the milk has vitamin D in it. Now, where did the vitamin D come from?
In fish.
Fish! And what did Prabhupada say to do?
Drink.
What did he say? Drink the milk or not drink the milk?
He said keep on drinking it.
Keep on drinking it. We need it for our brains. Prabhupada was practical. Now, nowadays we get milk with vitamin D, not from fish oil, much preferred. But the problem is practical. I can give you a... So Prabhupada gave one instruction, no meat, fish, or eggs. The other instruction, he said, drink the milk. You see? So we have to understand this. We have to understand it in some detail. Yes, you're about to get another question. It's time. Okay, we will stop here. This is time. I'm sorry, I don't want to keep the DVDs late. That's terrible. Hare Krishna, thank you very much.
Thank you.